there is a citizens uprising of sorts that's going on in the country right now. And the person we're about to bring into the studio may be at the forefront of leading that movement. He's a gentleman who is a former employee of Amazon, the biggest mega corporation in the United States. He led a protest against the deadly working conditions at an Amazon warehouse, which he will talk about, and now could potentially be looking to lead the effort or is leading the effort to potentially put forward a general strike. We don't know how it's going to happen, but the gentleman who is coming in our studio, Chris Smalls, will be able to share it with us. And we are pleased to welcome in Chris Smalls. How are you, sir?
Hey.
Hi. Good.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. It's our pleasure.
It's our pleasure to have you. So what you didn't mention isn't just that he worked for Amazon, is that he got fired for doing what he was doing.
You were totally fired. You were a terrible employee. Oh, we didn't want you working for us anymore. You didn't do us any good. Totally didn't do us any good.
But that's the whole point. That's the main point. You kind of skipped over the, okay, this is how they treat whistleblowers part, which is something that I talk about a lot, is whistleblowers. So thank you for coming on. And I respect what you did a lot. And you know, you're doing amazing things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for having me and giving me a chance to share my story.
Chris, if you can take it from the top, how this all came to be. Obviously, we know what the past 10 months in particular has been like as far as COVID is concerned, but your story is very interesting because there's a lot more dirt that is coming out now about the illicit business practices of Amazon. So you really blew the lid on this from the start. So if you could please share it, we would love to hear about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, so as you mentioned, you know, beginning of the virus in the States, February last year, it was in Seattle. Seattle is the epicenter. And while that was going, taking place here in New York and Staten Island, I was watching the news every day in tune. I couldn't get away from it. And I'm watching this virus kill senior citizens in Seattle, as it was the epicenter at the time. And I'm alarmed as a worker at Amazon. I'm supervisor. You know, I've been with the company since 2015. I work with employees in three states, tri-state area, New Jersey, Connecticut, New York. And to me, my responsibility is to them. I started off in that entry level position in 2015. I got promoted to a supervisor level, and these people are now my extended family. I spend 40, 50, 60 hours a week with them. So as I'm watching this virus on the news and I'm thinking about what's going to happen if it comes to the East Coast, which eventually did, how are we going to be protected? So initially, I tried to go through the proper channels, going to HR, raising concerns. They pretty much, you know, was like, no, nothing to worry about. We're taking precautions. We're following the CDC guidelines. But to me, I wasn't seeing that. I was seeing employees every single day start to get sick one by one in a domino effect. Flu-like symptoms, dizziness, fatigue, some cases vomiting at stations, you know, things that I didn't see on a normal basis. So I tried to fight behind the scenes, sending emails to the media, Governor Cuomo's office, De Blasio, Mayor De Blasio's office. No response, obviously. New York was starting to become the epicenter now. People are dying every 15 minutes. A lot's going on, and I knew I wasn't going to get any outside support at that time. So I returned back to work after taking some time off on March 24th, and I realized that my coworker, who I work hand in hand with, she was sick. I could see it on her face. And at this time, we had no PPE, no cleaning supplies, no facial masks, nothing. And I can see in her face, her eyes were bloodshot. She was walking around sluggish. And I said, hey, you should go home. And that's when she told me that she tested. She went for the testing the day before. And at that time, if you did get the test, that means you had to be showing severe symptoms. If you were healthy or asymptomatic, you weren't getting a test up here. So that was the first thing that was a red flag for me, the fact that she was able to come back to work without getting her results back. But the company allowed that. That's what the policy allowed. So it wasn't her fault. But, you know, it's just that we don't know what we're dealing with. And I was scared. So she went home 2 hours later. That day we had a meeting, something we do every single day. And in that meeting, my managers, my boss at the time, and higher ups, they said to not tell the employees that somebody tested positive 2 weeks prior. So that was the last day for me working at Amazon. When they told me that, and I said, my response was, well, are we closing the building down? And they said, no, business as usual. We don't want to cause a panic. I knew that my message and my stance didn't align with theirs. So I went home, tried to do the same thing with the emails, media contact, nothing. I had to return back to work. But instead of me working, I actually called my boss and I told her I'm not going to be working. I'm going to be off the clock this week. So I went back, sat in the cafeteria for 10 hours a day, organizing workers, interrupting the general manager's meeting. And on the last day of the week, they decided to quarantine me out of 5,000 people, nobody else. Not even the colleagues that was in my department, not even the colleague I ride to work with, just me. So I realized that, you know, this is something to silence, obviously, what we were doing, raising concerns. And I took further action. And on March 30th, we held the protest outside of that facility. 2 hours later, I was fired over the phone by the company. A week later, Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, along with his top VPs and general counsel, David Sapolsky, probably Jay Carney was in the room as well. They decided to run a smear campaign, or at least attempt to run a smear campaign on me, calling me not smart or articulate, and make me the face of the whole unionizing efforts against Amazon. Apparently somebody in that room didn't agree and they leaked that memo. So ever since, like you mentioned, for the last 10 months, along with my organization, TCOEW, the Congress of Essential Workers, we've been traveling the country, going to Jeff Bezos' residences all across the nation, and still raising stories and health concerns. That's what we're trying to do, continue to advocate for the workers that are still in there, speaking up for the ones with underlying health conditions, the ones that can't do what we're doing, which is travel and speak up and have these stories told. And we're trying to fight to unionize. You know, we need some protections as essential workers. And till this day, that's what our fight is at.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, as it relates to the state of Florida, one of the biggest problems we've had in terms of, you know, especially when it comes to congressional races against, you know, what you would call entrenched incumbents, is labor. And we are in a right to work state. So I think a lot of people in labor are fearful of challenging power. How has the response been with Amazon workers challenging power, knowing that if you attempt to unionize, they basically are going to come after you with everything they've got? You see what they do to Kashama Sawan up in Seattle. Now they couldn't beat her in an election. Now they're trying to recall her. And we all know that this is under the thumb of Bezos. This is what he does. I know a lot of people like to think of Trump as the scariest man alive, but no, to me, it's Jeff Bezos. The man wants to run the world.
Dr. Evil.
See it every day.
He's Dr. Evil.
How do we stop this?
Well, that's what we have to do. We have to get the public behind us. You know, public opinion matters, and that's the biggest kryptonite of Amazon. You see their commercials, you see their propaganda, you see how they try to make it seem like they're the greatest company in the world with no flaws. You know, they're quick to have spokesperson come on and tell you, you know, all the positive things. It's not the reality of the situation, though. So it's up to us, our independent media, the workers of Amazon and other essential workers that are in a similar situation, to raise our voices. You know, we have to continue to fight back. We know that up in Seattle, Kashama Sawan has that bill on the table that they're recalling. Amazon did last year. They spent $1.5 million on her campaign to fight against that. That's outrageous. You know, that's how much extreme they'll go to put people, are disproportionate, a whole class of people, which is unfortunately black and brown, you know, and that's what we have to really put out there, the fact that we are being affected the most by this company setting up shop in our communities and not protecting its workers. So it's up to us to come together and have a collective worker power, where when Congress is telling us we're essential workers, you go to work in the middle of a pandemic, we tell them, hell no, we're not going to work until you provide us with a decent living wage, Medicare for all, PPE, and a proper contact tracing system and testing system. Till then, we shouldn't be doing the work that we're doing in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, it's, to me, it's crazy. I mean, are we not ready for a general strike yet? Like, What is it going to take? I really think that if we had the yellow vests came with our cars like they do in France, that we would have seen it. I do. I think that it's just a matter of, well, and obviously we're bigger and there's a lot of area to cover, but we're at a point where we need the different sectors to come together. This can't be a thing where it's just one particular field. Like, this is across the board. Because, like, for example, here as a right to work state, unions are, they have no power here. I mean, it's just, it's sad. I mean, across the country, it's sad, but it's even worse here. And yet we have to fight to get a minimum wage. So the same people that are fighting against having a minimum wage also don't want unions. You can't have it both ways. You got to have one or the other. You know, like, you can look at Scandinavia and they don't have a minimum wage, but they have incredibly strong unions. They don't need a minimum wage. That's the point. You know, so it's like, we got to have one or the other. And I think at this point we need yellow vests. I'm serious.
I think they're daring us at this point. It'll be interesting to see tomorrow if, you know, what the COVID relief package actually looks like. You know, it, again, you know, Biden said 2,000 checks at one time. That's not enough. Now it's going to probably be $1,400, and they're going to say that that's enough. I just don't think people really understand how bad things are right now. And that's on top of this deadly virus that is not going away. The distribution of the vaccine has been horrifically done. The only state that's actually done well is West Virginia, and that's because they cut out Big Pharma. What a surprise.
Right.
What has been the response? Have you been building, I guess, what you would call, you know, a nationwide coalition with, you know, different workers, maybe not just Amazon, but, you know, all workers, minimum wage workers around the country who are, you know, trying to formulate some type of a general strike, whatever you want to call it, but so that the demands of working people are actually met? Because if essential workers decided not to show up to work tomorrow, yeah, everything would change like that.
Yeah.
It would. And, you know, I can tell you that's been my goal. You know, my goal is trying to build a nationwide coalition with international support as well. You know, you mentioned these other countries. They have no problem striking in other countries. We've seen what happened in India.
Yeah.
So they can pull these things off. But here in the States, you know, it's so divided, you know, it's hard to bring these movements together. But that's what we have to do at this time. We have to incorporate the environmental struggle, the labor movement, and the social injustice movement. All these movements come together. These are the massive, major, massive movements in this country. They all come together and all of our agendas align for one time, for one day. There's a general strike. You know, that's what the uprising of what you've seen, what happened with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Imagine that came to a labor side and the labor movement was to have an uprising with that many people in the streets.
Yeah.
These billionaires would tremble, and all it would take is one day. You know, I think people have in the mentality that we have to build up these, you know, mutual aid, but what does that look like? None of us has ever done this before. I certainly haven't. So, you know, I can tell you now, from being unemployed with no health insurance for the last 10 months, I'm doing just fine. You know, I get some more support from my community. I get support from people all over the world. And that's exactly what we have to do. We have to turn ourselves inwards. We have to rely on our neighbors and our community. Build your local community, mutual aid, and support your local organizations. And participate in whatever demonstrations you can. You know, a general strike is really doing nothing. And I think if the right company, which hint, hint, should be Amazon, but that has 800,000 workers nationwide, if this one company of the workers decide to strike, imagine Jeff Bezos losing all of those millions of dollars. The rest of the billionaires are falling in line in this country. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to continue to build the workers' power, tell workers' story, and change the public opinion so we get that leverage that we need to pull off a general strike.
You know, one of the things, I just want to say one of the things that before I forget, because you know how fast that could happen. When we were talking about what happened in India, did you notice how our media didn't cover that?
Did you notice
the blackout? And so to me, it's amazing that people don't realize that, what was it, 250 million people in India went on strike, workers went on strike, and that wasn't covered. Like, that wasn't that should really be a sign that they're starting to be a little bit aware that people are starting to catch on, you know?
And that's a great segue. Yeah. And that's a great segue, Chris. It's Black History Month and you are a Black man in America. Could you talk about the impact that corporate media has on being able to protect the status quo? Because the people who should be getting a voice, especially in the Black community, like Nina Turner and Dr. Cornel West, and they are never the ones that are put on corporate media to talk. I'm not going to name any names, but it's always people who are on the corporate take like anybody else.
Corporatists.
And so could you talk about that impact and how now all of a sudden everybody wants to act like they care about the Black community because it's Black History Month, but are they really doing the things that are necessary to make the change, which, let's face it, starts with economics?
Yeah, I'd say no, because otherwise Chris would have health care.
So. Right. There's so many examples we can use of people that should have a voice that should be on major media every single day. You can see what they did with even my story, for example. You know, when I first got fired and, you know, catapulted into the media spotlight, you've seen the 13 senators, presidential candidates, sign letters on my behalf and send it to Jeff Bezos. They did what politicians do. You know, they looked like they were for the cause. And then suddenly there was something new to talk about. They forgot all about Chris Smalls. They forgot all about the workers that got fired, exploited at Amazon and other companies. And these politicians haven't done anything for us. You know, so you see what's really important in this country. You've seen, at least in 2020, that this country is ran by capitalism, ran by the 1% class. And they'll do anything to make sure that the billionaires of this country are happy at, by all means, even if it does mean killing all 400,000 of its own American people. And that's what my fight is about. You know, the fact that COVID-19 is giving me the catalyst to say, hey, look, Black and brown workers are disproportionately affected by this virus. That's 80% of Amazon's workforce, Black, brown immigrants, indigenous people from all over the nation that are working for a minimum wage or less and don't have any hazard pay, don't have any protections, and don't have any voice. So what we have to do is change that. We have to change that from the ground up and make sure that our voice is absolutely heard in the White House. And when it comes to media, it's up to us. You know, it's up to the independent media that you have this platform to give us workers and us activists and organizers a voice.
It is up to us.
That's why we do this, really. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point, really.
I don't think people really understood the impact that corporate media has on especially the 65 plus demographic in this country and how much they shape the narrative in terms of what they believe. I saw the stories that they were throwing out there about you. I'm sure you let it roll right off your back, but you know, anybody who's looking at it, you know, they tried to paint you in the most negative light possible. I see how they do this. This is what I call, it's also a form of systemic racism because this is how they do it. They do it with what you call subliminal messaging. It's been done for decades and decades.
That's very fascist, actually.
And especially being Black History Month, you know, everyone wants to surmise, you know, why Dr. King was assassinated. He was most likely assassinated because he was talking about an economic uprising of workers, both Black and white. And as soon as you start talking like that, that's really when they're like, okay, this is enough. Yeah. We cannot allow this to go on. And it really makes you wonder, you know, what lengths are they going to take going forward? So what have you experienced? Because I happen to be good friends with Jordan Chariton, and he just put out another story, as I'm sure you're aware of, about this young lady. I can't remember, call her name off the top of my head, but her sister died because she was forced to work in horrific conditions at an Amazon warehouse, and they've been trying to keep the lid on it. So I am assuming, and you can share this because I'm sure a lot of people don't want to be on the record, but I'm willing to bet that these types of war stories go on at all different distribution centers all throughout the country.
Absolutely. And I can shed light on that because shout out to Jordan as well. Because I was actually the first person to contact her. Her name is Pushan Brown. She passed away. She was 38 years old. She left behind her 12-year-old daughter, Gabriella, her sister, Christina Brown, who also worked at Amazon, started a GoFundMe because she passed away suddenly in her sleep 2 weeks ago. We don't know the reason why, because she didn't have the money for the autopsy, and she had to make a swift decision to put her sister, away properly. So she received a call from Amazon asking about her sister whereabouts, not wondering about, you know, is she okay? They asked her, when is she coming back to work? And she had to literally tell the company that day on the phone that my sister died last night in her sleep. You know, can you guys help me out? The company said, oh my God, you know, we'll get back to you. And that was it. Nothing else. So a worker from that facility reached out to me, and I was lucky enough to get in contact with Christina, and I pushed it off to Jordan, and Jordan's done a great job blasting the story out there. Thank you so much for that, because when I got in contact with Christina, she had $700 in her GoFundMe. Now, till this day, she has $33,000. So nice. That just tells you right there, and everybody, once again, that we take care of ourselves. Amazon, the richest company in the world, destroyed this family's life forever. And not just hers, many others, including myself, family lives forever. And instead of even correcting their wrong by offering the money or reimbursement or anything, they lied to the media again and said that they didn't allow workers to test each other. So it's so crazy how insane, really, how this company doesn't know that this woman was trained by another worker and was a COVID tester at that facility for 4 months, 10-hour shifts every single day, testing hundreds of workers every week. And you're going to lie to the media and say we don't allow workers to test each other, when this sister that worked at Amazon physically seen her doing this, because she worked there as well, which is crazy to me. And then 2 weeks later, which now that the story's out there, they contacted her again and tried to send condolences 2 weeks after, and then go back to the building where her sister worked and post up her GoFundMe and a message to the workers saying we reached out to the family. It's so crazy to me. But this is the story that doesn't get out there or doesn't get told. So I'm glad that you brought this up. And yes, we're still fighting for her. We're pushing it out there. And I hope that this story is one of the stories that will get the public behind us and get workers behind us to come out and speak up, because that's what we need.
I do think we need to have more people at the top that are willing to speak up about this. I don't know if there are any union leaders out there that you've experienced any type of communication with that seem receptive to it. The only one that I have seen that might potentially be willing to stick her neck out there is Sarah Nelson, head of the CWA. It turns out that our, what I would call at least Jen's closest ally in the union movement in Florida, happens to have been a very high up person in the CWA for quite some time. He has quite a reputation. We might as well just say,
no, I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
I'm not going to do it.
Not going to use the F word. Okay.
but fucking Fred Frost. It's fucking Fred Frost.
He has been a thorn in Debbie Wasserman Schultz's side for quite some time, so much so that she literally has thrown pity parties for herself about why doesn't the CWA back her against Jen. It's pretty pathetic. But, you know, we do, like I said, live in a right to work state, and it's very hard for unions to really take a stand. Have you found, you know, like I said, somebody like Sarah Nelson, who is the head of the CWA, have you had any success making contact with any union leaders that would potentially stand in solidarity with the workers?
You know, it's a lot of them. You know, it's a lot of unions out there. The problem is, you know, every building is different. And when it comes to Amazon workers, every state, every building, and the cost of living, there's so many variations to the situation that I had to, you know, make sure that the workers get what they want. You know, that's the most important thing. So that's kind of the reason why I started my organization, to reach out and find out what workers want. You know, what do workers want? And I found out that certain workers do want unions. Other workers want more of a rank and file committee within their own workplaces. Taking a page out of what Google workers did a few weeks ago. Shout out to my brother Chewy Shaw, who I've been in talks with. So that's one example how you can create workers' power within your own workplace and kind of cut out the middleman, cut out the NLRB, which we've seen can also be corrupted in some sense, and have the wrong judge or wrong lawyers involved. So we see what's going on with the Amazon case. So there's certain things that we can do now immediately. So it's just up to the workers, you know. So when I talk to workers in different facilities other than JFK 8, I ask them, you know, what are you doing, or what would you like to do? Some of them say, hey, we'd like to unionize. They'll try to research a union that best represents them. Others are working on building their own rank and file committees within the workplace, which I think is more sustainable for a workforce of 600 to 800,000 people.
You know what you're sounding like. I mean, you're sounding like a socialist. I mean, you're talking about crazy talk, like workers should own the means of their production, and like they should own that. Like workers should actually profit from their own labor. I don't know.
Sounds radical, right?
It's just crazy talk.
Yeah, I'm a commie. You know, they call me commie. They call me this, that, you know, whatever you want to call me. I just call it, you know, it's right. You know, yeah. As a human being, we should have a decent living wage and definitely sweat equity for the work we put in. And obviously a wealth tax on all billionaires so that we can get back some of this money that we rightfully deserve.
Yeah, no, there shouldn't be billionaires. It's ridiculous. I always say, like, I have no problem against it in theory. And if they could get to that point, treating their workers fairly, paying their fair share of taxes, not screwing over the environment, and everybody is okay, I don't really care. I don't care how wealthy the wealthy get. What I care about is how poor the poor are. So you know, if everybody had what we consider to be a minimum standard of living of dignity and just respect, then that would be fine with me. If somebody else wants to have gold-plated fixtures on his, you know, personal private jet, I wouldn't care. So, you know, that's always where I'm at with it. But the concept of that, how far we're willing to let people go down and where we're letting people be as a society, is just completely unacceptable. And it's interesting when you talk about things like worker co-ops, because if we really had that, and I mean, which would be amazing, that obviously reduces, you don't need a union. So it's almost like that would be the ultimate way for workers to have power. Then union is sort of like a second best. And then all we're hoping for here is a minimum wage. So, you know, that's sort of like the hierarchy of how it should be.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I believe that, you know, once again, just for example, I give you a good example, you know, 600 to 800,000 workers of Amazon create a rank and file committee and they negotiate their own contract. Once again, same union like structure, but they sit down at the table with Jeff Bezos and they say, hey, look, you either give us this or, you know, we will unionize on you. So I feel like it's always a win-win. It's leverage for us workers, you know, whether we are rank and file or we have a union to protect us. Either or would be beneficial than what we have now.
Yeah.
Do you think we're at the point where we need a general strike?
Yeah.
We're past that.
That's what I said. We need the vests.
We've been past that. You know, the general strike should have happened in 2020, but you know, here we are. we're in 21, but yeah, we do need a general strike. You know, we've been lied to from day one already. You know, we're supposed to get 2,000. We're getting 1,400. We know it's going to happen. And this is the problem that I have, you know, in this country. It's like, we know. It's blatant. It's right in front of us. We know. We predict what's going to happen. And it happens. And then we tweet about it. We complain about it. We cry about it. And then the next thing happens. And then the next thing happens. You know, this is a recurring cycle. We know what these parties represent. We know that they don't represent us. we know that they're not going to do shit for us. I'm sorry if I can't curse.
No, please.
We'll be monetized hopefully in another week or so. So we're not
I'm practicing being good, but we don't really technically have to be good.
Well, we do. We could say, you know, that we the seven words that George says that you can't say.
Yeah. I won't talk like I really talk, but like I said, we know that they won't do nothing for us, and when is it going to be enough? When we're going to allow another 400,000 people to die? I don't know. You know, it's so many reasons why we should have done it already, but here we are now, and how do we get to the general strike? You know, once again, these movements that are out there, the environmental, the labor movement, then social injustice movement, they come together, you know, there you go right there. Or once again, we get to these Amazon workers. I think all billionaires and the rest of these corporations and working class will also join in.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that it's kind of weird. You don't know when the bubble's going to burst. You don't know when people are going to simply say that they've had enough. You know, there was that aha moment back in the fall, if you remember. It was, when Wolf Blitzer had Nancy Pelosi on CNN. And I'm telling you, you know, Jen and I were in D.C. recently, and you can see the tent camps everywhere. They're everywhere.
Oh, my God.
And I'm telling you, Blitzer probably, he seems to be one of the few people there that have a conscience. And he probably walked past an encampment and it really hit him. It's like, oh, well, this really is going on, because, you know, everyone in the Beltway pretty much lives in a bubble. So he saw it. He questions Pelosi, and Pelosi was like, how dare you question me? Like, who are you? Do you not know who I am? And I'm thinking, enough people are going to start to see this and think, wow, maybe they really don't care about people. I think that there's just so many. It's like Jen had put out, we had put out a social media post the other day, basically calling into question, you know, Biden actually taking the initiative he needs to take in this moment. And there were some people who felt the need to say, you cannot be questioning Biden. And it's like, all anybody ever wants to do is run cover for the status quo. Everyone is always playing defense. It's all about what we can't do. It's never about what we can and should do. And I think that that's the mindset of the millennial progressive, the Gen Xer even, or and the Gen Zer progressive, who is simply saying, no, it can actually be different. It can be better. We don't have to live like this. It's really just a matter of when it all comes together. I certainly hope there are other Chris Smalls that are out there, whether in California, in Washington State, in Texas, maybe Florida. That would be wonderful. Haven't heard of them yet. But I'm hoping that your role can be duplicated. Now, maybe we're not aware of them yet, but have there been some additional Chris Smalls that have arisen? And that's also a gentleman whose question is, what is the union situation at the Alabama warehouse, if you know about that? And is there maybe a Chris Smalls, if you will, that's leading the effort there?
You better stop that.
Well, yeah, I could tell you real quick about the union situation. The vote is on February 8th, and Amazon has done some things, surveillance. You know, they posted up some signs in the building. They're doing their usual anti-union busting tactic. But the union is doing a great job of getting to the workers, communicating with the workers. And I think it should be a positive outcome. You know, I'm hoping that we have the results that we want, so we can galvanize all the other facilities across the nation with this information. Like, hey, it's possible for the first time in American history, a building is unionized for Amazon. And so Roll Tide on that one.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that happens.
So I was going to ask, so that would be the first time. I mean, that would be the first one. So this is that's a really big deal.
US. Yes. That's first really time in the US. Deal. So it's a very, very, very big deal. Yeah. I've been getting crazy media requests about it, and I know they're being bombarded. I've tried to get in contact with union members down there. I can't, but we have many talks, especially some of the members of my org been communicating with some from their union. So it's been a whirlwind, but I know that we got it under control. I hope that it goes well and we're able to have some great news for the public and for Amazon workers.
is there anything that we could do to help? Because I do think that if they are successfully able to unionize, it will spiral all over the country.
Yeah, well, that's the only thing we can do is wait for that. And if it happens, it's time to amplify it. You know, that's what we have to do. We have to make sure that we don't let up on the gas, continue sharing this story and sharing it as much as possible so that other workers and other facilities are aware. Because that's what it's about. It's hard to get to them because you put yourself in their position. These workers are working 10, 12 hours a day. They come home, rinse, repeat. A lot of them don't check the media all the time. I know I didn't. I was so in tune with work that I didn't hear the outside controversy and noise. So we just got to make sure that we get through to these workers this time. And hopefully this news will do that.
You know what? I have to date myself just for a second because you're like Norma Rae. Like I'm sitting here and it's like I can do you know who, you don't know what I'm talking about. Have you ever heard Norma Rae?
And like that? It sounds familiar, but I may be.
Okay, well, it's a movie based on a real person. So it was a real person, but the movie was Sally Field, and this was back in the 70s, and she unionized.
Right. It just came out, didn't it, on Netflix? Was it?
I don't know if it just came out on Netflix, but I highly recommend it. I mean, it's old, but it's good, and it's kind of sad that it hasn't changed much in terms of what they'll go through to stop you from having rights, you know, like what people will go through to keep you down. It hasn't changed. But in our favor, we do have things like social media, whereas back in the day of Norma Rae, there was no email, there was no computer.
Nope.
You had to drive to see everybody. Like it's like, so we do have an advantage to some extent than we ever had before. That's what I think.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So this is what the 21st century entitles. You know, we have to adapt to, you know, the technology as well. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to utilize that to galvanize workers after February 8th.
Chris, you said that you didn't get too much reception from the presidential candidates, which is unfortunate. I know Bernie is the one person who made a collective effort to see to it that Amazon did pay a $15 minimum wage, which is great. But obviously it's nowhere near enough. There's always more that can be done. What is your take so far on the New York mayoral race? Because I do think, knowing that Cuomo is about as anti-union as it gets, amazingly, in the state of New York, potentially having, you know, somebody who is truly a, you know, workers' champion. I mean, Andrew Yang really went above and beyond, you know, helping Jen out when she ran for Congress. Mm. I know he's not the most progressive person in the world, but he definitely seems to have a pulse on what's going on with workers. I think Diana Morales is also another one who seems to be very progressive, is running as well. What's been your take so far, and have any of the mayoral candidates, any indication that they have any interest in, you know, what's going on, particularly with the Amazon workers in New York City?
Yeah, Diana Morales. I fully endorsed her already.
Okay, well, there you go.
She's amazing. She's been pretty much supportive since day one. Me and her met on the way down to Washington, and not met personally, but on Zoom, obviously. And we've been on several forums together. I just did a video for her a few weeks ago, actually. So she's been in the streets. She's not just the one that's gaslighting and talking. She backs up her words. She shows up. She's done amazing community work, handing out laptops, supporting the laptops for Black children in the community. And she's been a voice, a powerful voice, and she represents us. She represents the working class. I think she's a single mother with a single mother raising daughters in the city. Sounds like me, you know, growing up a single parent home. My mother raised me, two boys. So I can relate to her, and I think that she'll be a great candidate, great mayor for the city of New York. Andrew Yang, on the other hand, he's good. You know, I feel like he's a good candidate as well, but I don't like the fact that there's certain things I don't like. The fact that he was MIA. He wasn't here in the streets with us protesting. I didn't see him, and I don't know if I could be mistaken. Maybe somebody else did, or, you know, I know from what I've seen, Diana on the streets. I've seen her speaking at events. I've seen her show for Amazon workers. I didn't see that from Andrew Yang. And I seen all his little videos he's posting out now. You know, it's good and all of that, but when you're actually not here for the pandemic, then you want to show up and be the candidate. I don't know how that's going to relate to people.
Valid. It's a very fair point. And, you know, the great thing about your mayoral race is that you have ranked choice voting. So while you may not get everything, I definitely think that Diana and Andrew are the two best going in New York, and hopefully they could be one and two, because I think you do need that new ideas and new wave concept, but you also need people who are willing to get into the trenches. And that's what New York is about. And that's why, like I said, you know, we're not picking favorites here. Jen's certainly not.
But, well, no, and I don't live in New York. I have no horse in that race, and it's not my race.
It's very important, though, to know what is going on, you know, on the ground, because it is the, you know, obviously we all support Nina Turner, you know, to become the next congressional representative in Ohio's 11th district. But other than that, the New York mayoral race is really the only major race that's going on right now. But it is a very important one. And whoever ultimately ends up leading New York going forward, especially when it comes to workers' rights, is going to be essential. It's the biggest city in the world. It's also the city with, you know, probably the highest level of income inequality. And it goes without saying that you being there and having experienced that, you know, we have to have change, and it all starts on the ground. Now the question is, can we really sustain it? That's, I think, the biggest issue with any movements on the left is sustainability, the ability to understand that you're going to get your ass kicked several times before you finally get anywhere. It's just the way it is, because we're trying to do this without money, without resources. We're just trying to do it with our collective guts and will. But I think we're getting to the point where we might actually see a breakthrough. And I'm assuming you feel that we may be close to something as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, now that we have a new administration, it seems like, you know, we can see a clearer future. It was kind of gray, still kind of gray, but it's starting to clear up a little bit. You know, we have an administration that we can work with. I don't know how. Don't ask me how, but we can. You know, there's ways that we have to do it. And I think, like you mentioned, from the ground up, you know, us organizers, activists, councilmen and women, politicians, whatever you are to your community, the time is now. The time is the window of opportunity for you to have some change and have some systemic change is now. You know, we can't wait another 4 years. We can't allow for the same thing we've seen what happened with the Obama. Well, this is kind of like the Obama third term, but, you know, we can't allow for the administration to build up, you know, for 8 years and then give us another Trump. You know, so we got to make sure that we're involved with every single election, from the local all the way up to the federal level, being involved, putting in place politicians and people that represent the working class.
Yeah.
Well, I can only hope now that we are living in a different time than we were 12 years ago, where you do actually have, you know, it's not big yet, but, you know, the squad, and there's a handful of true progressives that are in elected office now. And obviously in your city, you know, you do have a couple, obviously Jamal Bowman and AOC. And even, you know, he's outside the city, but Mondaire Jones is also really good. I do think that that's going to continue to change. I think that there is this progressive uprising that is happening in New York. I don't know if you've gotten any type of response or feedback from any of the federally elected officials in New York City. But I do think that continuing to put the pressure on and building the relationships, I guess the one that I would ask, you know, and obviously we'll wrap up shortly, but have you guys had any success with an organization like DSA, for example, or are there other organizations in New York or even nationwide that are interested in standing in solidarity with the Amazon workers?
Yeah, they all are. DSA, Sunrise, the major orgs, they definitely supported, you know, support Amazon workers. I know that for a fact. You know, we've done certain events together in the past, and they've definitely been supportive of our actions, demonstrations in the past. So I just hope that it continues to stay that way. It needs to be on a larger scale, though. We need all the chapters to come together. You know, what happens with these major orgs, you know, there's chapters all over the country, different states, different agendas, different eagles, You know, same thing happens. You know, it's still sort of divided, even though we're supposed to be all collective. And I just think, once again, if those major orgs were to come together and also bring the movements together with them, with the working class, there's a general strike. It would be a lot easier to organize one if these major orgs and these leaders of these major orgs were to get on a call, a national call. And I'm shout out to Sarah Nelson, because I hope that she really, I kind of tweeted at her the other day about that. So hopefully it happens. You know, that's what we need. We need a national call with these major orgs, activists and organizers that's been doing work, and organize something that's going to really, I guess, apply the pressure that we need. And if it's a general strike, so be it.
Yeah. Well, we're happy to participate.
We'll get Jen on that call.
Yeah. I mean, we're happy to participate. You know, I like a good strike. I love a good protest.
Well, one that actually is going somewhere.
Jen has
definitely established considerable credibility in the streets with Fight for 15 in particular. You know, that's where the change really happens. I mean, not that, you know, any protest is good, but
local,
you gotta have,
local.
Yeah, you gotta have teeth. And that's,
you're in Florida, right?
Yeah.
We're down.
And when I graduated high school, I went to college in Florida, and I left because I was in Bush.
Where were you?
I was in St. Lucie County.
Okay. That's not.
You were in
Bush was in office, and gas was like $4 or $5. I was making $7 at the time an hour, minimum. So I already know what Florida goes through, and so to speak, a little bit. And yeah, I deserve way more than 15 an hour still. You know, I know they always say, you know, no state tax and, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You know, $30 an hour minimum wage, I'm pushing for nationwide.
Yeah, I mean, these guys at our local level. So the work, like McDonald's workers, for example, they're making what? It's $8.25.
Yeah.
It's $8.25 an hour in the Fort Lauderdale area.
Yeah.
It's an outrage. It's an outrage.
But people in this country have accepted crumbs for far too long. That's the problem. And that's why Bernie was so dangerous to the machine, because he started telling people that, no, you really can live better than this. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Every other developed country on earth has a living wage and health care, and they give a damn about their environment, and they give you paid sick leave, and they care about kids, and they care about you living a decent life. That is not the way it is here in this country. It hasn't been for a very long time, if it ever was. But I do think people are starting to say, yeah, you know, the hell with this. And I think a lot more people now are becoming aware of how the game is played. You know, for example, and we can leave with this, you know, the whole fiasco with GameStop, it wasn't so much that a whole bunch of people on Reddit figured out how to beat the game. It was the fact that they beat the game, and then the people who run the game decided, yeah, we're not letting you do this. We're going to rig it in broad daylight. That's the story. That is the story.
Can I just say, like, if that were a childhood playground, you tell me, Chris, you're playing a game with someone and then you start to win and they throw away the game. That kid is going to get ass kicked. That kid is going to get shoved in a locker. Right. And that's what needs to happen here, because you're not allowed to pull that crap. There needs to be like some sort of like honor amongst thieves kind of thing. And they beat them at their own game and they can't handle that. So they're turning it off. No.
I know. And ironically, the app was, you know, Robin Hood. So it's like, yo, it doesn't make any sense. You know, well, we've seen a prime example of how when billionaires see their millions start to go the opposite direction, that's when they want to cry boo-hoo on TV. And that's the real issue. That's the real problem that doesn't get addressed a lot, is that the wrong people got the money. That's what it's about. If the billionaires got it and the hedge funds got the money, wouldn't be talking about this. But because the wrong people in the wrong class that represent the wrong type of people got the money and beat the game, like you mentioned, now we need regulations again. Now the game is rigged. You know, the game is flawed now. So that's just to tell you, the general strike that will absolutely have billionaires in this country trembling, the same way you've seen with GameStop. If Amazon workers decide to stay home for one day, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Zach Mark and Zach from Facebook. I can't pronounce his last name right now, but yeah, him, the guy from Google, you know, all these billionaires would absolutely start to tremble.
Let's do that. Let's have a complete Amazon blackout day. Let's do it on Black Friday.
That's what I would do.
No, really? I would. I think everybody who works for Amazon, yes. But it's the reality is it's a huge risk for people to take that are in very vulnerable positions. And so it's easy for me to say that. However, that being said, I would be so supportive and do everything I could because it would be one day. I think one day would do something. If every Amazon worker didn't go to work for one day, what would happen?
The economy would collapse.
And so we're not talking about like you would see in the old days where people would have to be on strike for weeks and you'd have to have like funds to feed them.
No.
This one day.
Chris, I have one recommendation, and this is something that either you or somebody within the movement should be able to find out. How much would Jeff Bezos lose of his net worth if Amazon shut down for one day? I'd be curious to know what that number is. Is it $3 billion? Is it $5 billion? Whatever it is.
How he going to eat?
Yeah. I'd like to know what would happen if there was a general strike of Amazon for one day and how much Bezos and his shareholders would suffer because of it.
And, it would be glorious. Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I have no sympathy because it'd be one thing if he was actually in any way trying to help his workers. Then it's another thing entirely if he was just completely neutral. Then you take it a step further. He is not only not neutral, he does everything in his power to make his workers suffer. So yeah. As far as I'm concerned,
this is a guy,
if you can't see what he's up to at this point, if you can't see what his end game is, which is basically to be big brother and control the whole thing, then I don't know what you're looking at. This is 1984 come to life. And if you haven't read the book, you got to read it. Because if you haven't, there is going to come a point in maybe the next one or two decades where you're going to have a TV on the wall in your room and Bezos is going to be watching you every day of your life. So I know everyone's that's absolutely crazy to think that, but how do you not see the trajectory of where he's going with this?
Oh, no. He wants to own water and air. He's the guy from the Lorax. That's what I think of. Like, he wants to own the air.
He's been compared to so much, the Death Star from Star Wars. You know, what I really think is, you know, what he's trying to do is colonize another planet or something. You know, he built this space, you know, Blue Origin, trying to fly out of fly away from this planet.
Good riddance to him.
But yeah, I know, but that's the scary thing. You know, it's like, is he draining this planet from life and, you know, disregarding everybody? Is it popular control? I don't know. But that's the bigger picture. You already got these billionaires making bunkers and mountains and stuff like that. You know, these billionaires are doing some things that are just not spoken about too often. But we have to really be aware that we shouldn't be making them rich as they are anymore. And absolutely take away from the richest man in the world and give back to the poor.
I do think that the biggest issue with Amazon is probably food. It is amazing how many people don't realize people order their food from Amazon. And if they had the ability to, you know, one of the things we're working on down here is building community gardens. Sustainability is obviously very big. I don't know what the answer is. All I do know is if a game plan could come together where workers could finally have their moment where they could finally take back some control of the means of production, whatever that looks like. Dan Price in Seattle, I'm forgetting the name of his company right now. He's probably the one guy who has been successful and believes in worker co-ops and is actually fighting on those grounds. I also think somebody like Mark Cuban could potentially be convinced that that might be the right way to go forward. And the last thing I will ask you before we go, there has been this massive I wouldn't even call it propaganda, but there's been this massive movement to stop any type of coalition between what you would call the Bernie Progressive Workers Coalition and the Trump Workers Coalition. What has been your experience dealing with working class people who are, let's say, Trump supporters or just Trump voters, but they are open to the ideas of a living wage and healthcare and things of that nature? Do you find that there has been progress made on that front? Because if there is, I feel that that's probably more than anything else what they're most afraid of.
Well, I could tell you, I get support from both sides. Don't matter if they blue or red, because at the end of the day, we all essential workers. And I could tell you, honestly, it's weird because you've seen me on, you know, media outlets that's far left, far right. You know, I've been on Breitbart, I've been on Newsmax, I've been on Fox, I've been on these right wing shows, and I don't care because I'm telling my truth. You know, and if you relate to that, then I have no issue with you. And I believe that's the same thing you have to approach these movements. You don't have to agree with anybody when it comes to politics. It's find one person that you can agree 100% on every single thing. It's impossible. You know, you're going to disagree in certain things, but you got to find a commonality. And if that is having a decent living wage and Medicare for all and, you know, the unionizing and protections, and the things that are important to communities, I have no issue with you. But the only thing I will not do, you will not see me building camaraderie with people that are on, you know, that represent neo-Nazis or any type of groups. You will never see me do that. But if you are a working class person, and I can tell you I have on both left and right, the workers have reached out to me. I don't ask them what political party it is. I ask them, are you an essential worker and are you working at Amazon? And I believe that's the only thing that we should be building on, is how can we protect one another, because we're the ones that's being affected, not the 1% class.
And we'll leave with this. Jen and I did go to Trump's rally last year. Actually, it was 2019. It's amazing.
Yeah, we did. We went to a Trump rally at the arena
in Sunrise. And I can tell you that of the 20 some odd thousand people that were there, no joke, that's how many were there.
Yeah.
I would say maybe 5% of the crowd, maybe a little bit more, but not much, if that, are what you would call the crazy Trumpers that you see on TV.
Yeah. Like the people that did the insurrection at the Capitol, correct, those types of people. That was a very small portion of the people that were at this. People don't realize
that. I even made a point to reference this when we walked into the arena. Right as we were walking in the door, there was it was a Latino family of a husband and wife and their three kids walking in.
Yeah. I mean, it was very diverse. It wasn't what people are perceiving. And that is, those people do exist.
But that is the danger. The danger is that the working class exists on both sides. They are substantially large, but the danger that the establishment sees is that enough people like Jen and I on the left are going to recognize people that are working class that are on the right that did support Trump, but they are not loonies. They just happen to think that Trump was actually fighting for them. He wasn't.
Right.
But the point is, there is that potential to bring those people together. And if that happens, that's when the dam breaks. How we make that happen, I'm not entirely sure.
We're doing it. But this is part of it.
And I think as long as individuals like yourself are leading the charge, I think the sky's the limit. And I really think that your decision to just try to coalesce with anybody and everybody who believes that workers in this country deserve better than what they're getting right now, I don't think we're that far away. Because like I said, I think the dam's going to break soon. And it's just a question of, are the workers going to be ready to take the reins when it does happen?
They are now.
I think they are. And we can't thank you enough for coming on tonight. Obviously, this is going to be all over social media. It's going to be on YouTube. So guys, if you haven't liked and shared, this is Chris Smalls, former employee of Amazon. He is leading the charge for not just unionization, but also a general strike. Workers need rights and they need help.
And check it out. And how nice and convenient that you have your
website
on your name. So that makes it so easy. So everyone check that out. If you're just listening, it's tcoew.org. tcoew.org. So, because it was brought to my attention that we do have a lot of people that just listen.
TCOEW, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as well.
Yeah.
@shut_down Amazon on Twitter. No surprise there.
Well,
it's happening, my friend. And we thank you again. And I'm sure we'll be seeing you around and keep fighting the good fight.
We're here for your South Florida help when you decide to do a general strike.
Yes,
I would love to come to South Florida right now. I'm in 24 inches of snow, so nice season soon.
last thing before you go, Chris, what is the lady's name? Fight for 15?
Linda Joseph.
We're going to have to link you up with our friend Linda Joseph.
The Fight for 15. You need a connection down here. That's the person.
Yeah, I'm going to
be there. And yep. I will be there. We will bring the organization down there, and we'll absolutely stand in solidarity with that.
All right. We just put her name in the chat, Chris. So wait, that's not it. Where's my chat? I went all the way up. Okay, there it is. Yeah, so Linda Joseph, Fight for 15. She is great. If there is a rally for workers' rights in South Florida, she is leading the charge. Yeah. So she's definitely somebody you're definitely going to want to connect with. And if there's anything we can do to help, we will be here to assist as well.
Absolutely. Solidarity. Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Peace out, my friend.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.